Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. Stay ahead of all the big games in the best league in the world, the Premier League. With the latest odds, form guides, expert opinions and more, the fans are the players at Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus, begambleaware.org. T's and C's apply.
Hello and welcome to Premier League All Access with me, Sam Matterface, the former England and West Ham striker, Dean Ashton. And it's a welcome return for the one and only Darren Lewis. Here's what's coming up.
Salah is a wide forward, but in terms of a player in the centre forward position, with the composure to take chances, Jota is the best one.
I really felt that all of the teams in Europe over this last week have looked vulnerable, which they might not have looked so much in the Premier League.
That's why their recruitment is so good, because they've got lads like Trossard who, when they're called upon, they can do what they've been bought for.
Still, the three promoted clubs haven't managed to claw their way out of the bottom three. What does that say about the disparity between those who are established in the Premier League and those that are coming up? Darren, hello. Welcome back to the podcast. How are you?
I'm very well indeed. It feels as though I'm back home with the guys. Great to see you and Dina.
Hold on.
Darren, wait.
This is the time for lovemaking.
It's so good to have you back.
Dino, can I give you some context around that, please?
Yes, please do.
It was a discussion that I was having, that I was explaining to the guys off camera, might I add. I was having a discussion with someone, one of the foreign journalists, and we were talking about kickoff times. And at the time, he was telling me about a couple of occasions where they kicked off around about 10 o'clock at that time in that country. And he said, over here, that is the time.
As you've heard, that's his excuse anyway. Dino, you okay? You recovered from Thursday night's encounter between Liverpool and Atalanta, which both you and I were at, and it was a stunning, stunning night, wasn't it? I still can't quite get my head around exactly what was wrong with Liverpool, but they looked a little bit shell-shocked.
Yeah, they did, and you could feel it in the stadium. It wasn't right. There was, I think, the supporters sort of matched what was on the pitch, which was a team that, so unusually at Anfield, were disjointed. And, you know, the amount of times that they just misplaced a pass, and that kind of feeds into the support. But I have to say, and Klopp recognised it, in that, you know, Gasperini got it spot on. And they were so brave in the way that they approached it. And because of that, they got the rewards for it. And I thought it was just a really, really impressive performance from Atalanta. And it can be easy just to say, well, Liverpool were poor. But I just thought they were so good in the way that they approached it. I've not seen it done as well as that at Anfield against Liverpool.
Yeah, tactically spot on, and they were ruthless with their finishing as well. They had more chances, but they did take three of them. And to take three of them at Anfield is quite something. And Scamacca, obviously a former West Ham United player, 8-27 when he was at the Hammers, but coming back to haunt a Premier League team, will make headlines too. Darren, listen, you're a Liverpool fan, we know that. Let's ask you what you think about the reasons behind it. Could there be any legitimacy in the suggestion that actually the idea of Jurgen Klopp leaving at the end of the season, everybody knowing about it, the desperation amongst the players to feel as if they've got to honour him in a way with some sort of level of success, can it create more tension and anxiety rather than galvanise the team as you would hope it would? I mean, it's a little bit similar, in a sense, or could it be a little bit similar to the sort of stuff that happened to Steven Gerrard towards the end of his last couple of weeks of his Liverpool career?
No, I think it's... I think there is an anxiety to actually do well, because if you look at the results since the announcement of Jurgen Klopp leaving, the side have actually done very, very well. If anything, absolutely, they've been used as the barometer for other clubs to match, because if you look at Bayern Munich, they've been all over the place since the news emerged that Thomas Tuchel are going to leave. But Liverpool, they've been focused, they've stayed in the title race, they've scored goals, they've come from behind to rescue points. I just think we saw a little bit of it in the previous game against Manchester United. There's just this sloppiness in front of goal, this inability to take their chances. Normally the decision-making's on point. You've got a decision-maker right next to us here who knows all about scoring goals, so he'll tell you better than I can. The composure that they normally have in front of goal has just gone missing in the last couple of games. I think they'll get it back. And if anything, two positives. A, they've got a chance to put it right in a couple of, well, against Crystal Palace. And they're at home for that game, so that should give them the ability to get back in the groove. And B, the return of Jota, because I think, obviously, Salah is a wide forward, but in terms of a player in the centre-forward position, with the composure to take chances, Jota is the best one.
Yeah, that's been the theme over the last couple of weeks, that they have missed so many big chances. Listen, I said to Dino before the game, I wasn't worried about them in front of goal because they've scored 127 goals this season, the most in Europe's top five leagues. But actually, last night, that did hamper them a little bit. But I think they didn't get as many clear-cut chances last night as maybe they got in previous games, Dean, and that was down to Atalanta. What Darren said there, I think, was key, and that is that you can bounce back at the weekend. And when you and I spoke to Jurgen Klopp after the game, Dean, that was one of the things that he sort of demanded. He said, we will get a reaction. I can't ensure that we are going to bounce back and win, but we will get a reaction.
Yeah, and I think he put it down as a bad night, and every team can have one. It is about the reaction from the team. And as Darren said, they're very much in that title race, and will expect to beat Crystal Palace at home. I think, you know, you can have a little bit of sympathy in that he's trying to feed players back in, Jota included. I'm sure he wants to play them for longer. You know, he mentioned that Trent Alexander-Arnold was only on the bench really because they had those extra substitution places on there, and we're probably never going to get on. So he's got to somehow weave them players back in at the same time of not being able to drop the levels. And you saw it last in the week on Thursday, that the minute you do against top quality opposition, which Atalanta are and have been for a good few years now, if you drop it for a moment, then teams will pounce. They're ready. That it's a big game playing Liverpool at any moment, and Crystal Palace will feel the same. So there has to be a reaction. And you know, this Liverpool side, what wouldn't surprise me at all if they went and gave Crystal Palace a thumping and went and stuck five in. But at the same time, if Crystal Palace get it right, I think they could frustrate the team and that crowd as well.
Can I ask you a quick question, Dean? In the game against Atalanta, I noticed that the two centre-halves, there was so much space in between them as the full-backs pushed forward in search of a goal. And it was just crying out for someone to be able to utilise that space between them. One misplaced pass. It was a very similar thing against Man United. Kwanzaa tries to play that ball across the centre circle to Van Dijk, and Fernandez scores from there, basically. Do you think that centre forwards are looking for that now from Liverpool?
Well, I said it in commentary as well. It's a couple of times now I've seen teams actually earmark, especially Virgil van Dijk, as the player that Liverpool look to start most attacks. You know, he's so good on the ball, whether that's from, you know, hitting a raking diagonal or to playing into midfield. And they do look to feed the ball around to get it to him. And teams have earmarked that. Last night, Atalanta was superb in terms of Scamacca and De Ketelaere doing brilliantly and making sure that wasn't the case. So then all of a sudden, Keller has got a choice. And I thought Endo needed to take more responsibility to properly drop in between them if you need to really open the space up for McAllister to come and receive the ball. But definitely teams are looking at how do you stop Liverpool at source, and that seems to be through stopping Van Dijk.
Let's talk about Crystal Palace Liverpool a little bit later on and what the implications of that result might be in the title race. In the other game in the Europa League on Thursday night, West Ham were beaten by 2-0. David Moyes says he thinks that they are still in the tie. Are they still in the tie after conceding 33 shots and having just one in the entire game, Darren?
No, they're done. And I don't need to mean to be as blunt and certainly not disrespectful towards West Ham because everybody knows the job that I think that David Moyes has done and is doing there. I think the first goal they could have come back from, this 2 goals down away to a side that are undefeated in 42 matches now, it's not going to happen. They will have to go on the front foot over there and Bayer Leverkusen will pick them off. They're too intelligent a team. They're too resilient in defence. They're too well-organised and disciplined. And West Ham, in every game, have a mistake in that back line. So can I see them going there and winning? No. Can I see them going there and conceding more goals? Yes. I think the first goal wasn't... If they'd gone in 1-0 down... Fair enough. But 2-0, I just can't see it. That second goal, really, a little bit like the goal that Aston Villa conceded late on in their tie. Had they not conceded that, I'd have said they were nailed on to go and win. And we'll get to Aston Villa in a bit. But certainly, I think the late goal that West Ham conceded in injury time, I think that's done them now.
Well, Aston Villa did win by 2-1 against Lille, the second leg next Thursday live on TalkSport. In fact, all the second legs of those Europa League and Europa Conference League games are live on the TalkSport network. Same too with the Champions League second legs. Arsenal go to Bayern and Manchester City welcome Real Madrid. What a thrilling week of Champions League football it was. It was edge of your seat stuff right from the very start. Pep Guardiola said after the game at the Bernabeu, after one or two people suggested that, you know, when you get in front in a game like that, should you have not closed it out? He said, have you ever played at the Bernabeu? Now, I've been to the Bernabeu a few times and it is a stunning place. It's even more of a stunning place now that they've rejigged it and put the roof on. But it is one of the... There's the seven wonders of the world and there's the seven sort of stadiums or sporting events that you have to go to. And the Bernabeu is one of those. It is one of the crown jewels. And it is a difficult place to emerge with anything from. The fact that they've managed to score 3 goals there and they've come away with a draw, I think leaves it nicely poised in their favour going into the second leg, Dean.
Yeah, I think so. And you know, he's got so many options. Pep Guardiola, obviously... Kevin De Bruyne was taken ill, I think, before the game. And you would expect a home game. He could really come into that team and make it very, very difficult for Real Madrid, who defensively don't look great. And that's a big issue, I think, coming to the Etihad in the return leg. The one thing I would say is, though, I think we can at times get a little bit ahead of ourselves in terms of thinking of the quality of the Premier League and how competitive it is every week. And just think when these ties are made, the English teams are just going to sort of cruise through. And you know, I know, you know, Manchester City and Arsenal have...
Do you think, therefore, that there is a little bit of complacency sometimes amongst not just fans, but sometimes managers as well? Just sometimes do we take these teams a little bit for granted?
Possibly. And I just think... You know, they had control. Manchester City had lots of control and so did Arsenal. But there was just there's a difference. There's such a massive step up in quality with those teams that'll hurt you on the break. And I really felt that all of the teams in Europe over this last week have looked vulnerable, which they might not have looked so much in the Premier League. But against these top sides, they pick you off. They've got so much quality. And actually, I think it shows that we're maybe not as far ahead as maybe we think. I don't know what you think, Darren.
Yeah, I do agree with you. I do agree. I think we get so intoxicated by the quality of the top teams here in England that we assume that they're going to do what they do to clubs here to the best of the rest across Europe. But I think If you look at Real Madrid, they've lost only once all season. And that was away to Atletico Madrid in front of their own fans. They're outstanding. They're 8 points clear at the top of La Liga. Rodrigo and Vinicius Jr., the two superstars of Brazilian football, they're even better than they were last year. Their decision-making is better. Their composure is better. They've got the leading scorer in Spain, Jude Bellingham, 16 goals in La Liga. And people say, well, defensively, they're not great. But it's because they've got so much confidence in their front six that their instinct is not to think about the back door necessarily. Their instinct is to overwhelm and wipe out teams with their front six. And there's an argument for saying that their best player is actually their manager, the experience of the manager who just gives them the right tactical configuration to be able to go at opposition teams. Where this is interesting is that City are undefeated at home since November 2022. And Real Madrid, as I was saying before, they've only been beaten once all season. Something's got to give. If Kyle Walker's not fit for the second leg, I think I might give City Real Madrid the edge, because I just think in the wide areas, Guardiola's a fantastic player, but he's not a left fullback. I don't know if Ake's going to be fit for the second leg as well. And I don't see a player with the speed of Kyle Walker that can match Vinicius Jr. And while you're going to be preoccupied with those two players in the wide areas, you do have Jude Bellingham, who is able to get goals as well through the middle. So I know everyone's going to say De Bruyne is back and Haaland, you know, he was quiet in the first leg, he'd be better in the second. I don't know. I'm thinking that it's going to be Real Madrid tonight, I have to say.
Big absence for Real Madrid at the heart of the defence. There's no Aurelien Tchouaméni because he got a booking after about 20 seconds in that game on Tuesday night. So they are sort of a little bit light in that area. Eder Militao has just come back from an ACL injury. He's hardly played any minutes. In fact, he's played just 1 minute of competitive football since coming back from injury. But they do need a little bit of help in that central defensive area. I thought when Luka Modric came off the bench in this game on Tuesday night, there was almost a sense of calm and composure which enveloped Real Madrid. The way he dictated the play, he picked it up, he sprayed balls, he added composure to their play, knitted it together so much better. And I think if he's involved from the start on Wednesday night, it could be slightly different. I think it's going to be a humdinger of a tie. Of course, it's live on TalkSport. Very quickly on Arsenal, because we're going to go into Arsenal in a little bit more detail in just a second, because we're going to talk about the Aston Villa game. But just a one-word answer from you both. Do you think they can win in Bavaria next Wednesday? Darren?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Dino?
Yeah, I think it'll suit them even more, to be honest, that at times they can counter-attack against Bayern, which I think Arsenal would actually prefer.
Interesting. Okay. Let's get stuck into the weekend's Premier League action now, starting with a title race. All three teams at home after their midweek European excursions. Arsenal take on Aston Villa Sunday, 4:30. Arguably, they have the trickiest tie on paper, but they do have not only an extra day's rest in comparison to Manchester City, but 2 days extra rest in comparison to their opponents, Aston Villa. How will that impact the game, Dean?
I think it'll have a huge impact because Aston Villa have had to play their best side against Lille, and I don't think they have the strength in depth at the moment with the injuries they still currently have to cope with rotating. So I think those players will be rolled out again. I think it is interesting. I think, you've looked over the season, you think that Aston Villa are a worse team away from home than they are Villa Park. And actually, they're the fourth best team away from home, whereas actually they're the fifth at home. So actually, they're just a very good team and a very well-organised team under Unai Emery. So I don't think this will be easy at all. I don't see this being a huge margin of a scoreline. I think it'll be a tough test still for Arsenal. But 2 days extra is a lot. At that elite level, recovery time, I think, is key. And I think that will tell come the later stages of the game.
And there's been some interesting sort of developments in terms of the influence of key personnel over the course of the last year, Darren. Jorginho coming into the team at times to add a little bit of nous and experience. Obviously, Declan Rice has had an excellent impact on the on the group. But Leandro Trossard has been in terrific form. 14 goals this season, the best minutes to goals ratio in the team. Should he be included from the start more often? Or is this a great symbiotic relationship with Martinelli, where those two can sort of sometimes start games and tire out fullbacks, and then occasionally when the game needs and requires it, the other one to come off the bench and make an impact?
I think the latter, because it works. And why would you change something that works? The great thing about Trossard in particular is his attitude. He's come to a club knowing that he's not going to be a first-team player, but he's patient, he's hungry, he's got the desire. And the culture at Arsenal is that if you can come in and you've got the right attitude towards what's expected of you, then you can come in and perform. And that's why their recruitment is so good, because they've got lads like Trossard who, when they're called upon, they can do what they've been bought for. He scored 7 goals off the bench in the Champions League, as he did the other day, which is more than any other player in the top 5 leagues. And I think his composure in front of goal and all the technical ability that he's brought from Brighton to Arsenal has helped them superbly well. And he is part of the reason why they've managed to defy this widespread, deafening noise suggesting that they needed to buy a striker. They've scored more goals than any other team in the Premier League now.
Yeah, they have the best attack and the best defence, don't they? And that's probably one of the key reasons why they're top of the table. Their goal difference, +9 over Liverpool as well, +11 over Manchester City. That area on that left-hand side, which I think, you know, maybe people thought when Xhaka went, that would be a sort of difficult sort of channel for them to sort out, Dean. Has been plugged by those two players, but their left-back area is a little bit more vulnerable, isn't it? Kvyat had a difficult night against Bayern Munich. Zinchenko, since he's been coming back, hasn't exactly pulled up many trees. Is that an area that they need to sort out quickly? And could Jurrien Timber be the answer once he's back from his very long injury?
I think he's asking a lot for Jurrien Timber to come back and be up to the speed after such a long injury, which I know all about. It's difficult to be ready. But, you know, woe betide you show weakness at this level of football. And there was a weakness there. I know Sane's a special player and got ridiculous acceleration. But all of a sudden, teams will be thinking, there's a slight chink in the armour. And you know, up against Aston Villa, there'll be Bailey or Diaby. He'll drift out to that side and they'll be looking for it again. I think Kivior's been excellent. But again, as soon as you show one sign of weakness, teams will try and exploit that. So I'm pretty sure it'll be something they'll be looking at. I think their recruitment's been excellent. So why wouldn't they? I think Zinchenko's different because he will properly drift into midfield. But then that's been an issue when that gap has been left, when they lose possession. So yeah, it's something I'm sure they'll be looking at, Arteta and his team, after that result and the performance on that side, especially facing Aston Villa, who've got a strength down the right-hand side.
Well, Aston Villa and Spurs for most of the campaign have looked like that they are going to easily secure fourth or fifth, one of them between them. But fifth might not now be enough to secure Champions League football. And I have been saying this all season, don't get carried away. The figures keep coming in and you keep assuming that England is going to get a fifth place Champions League spot. There are good teams in Europe. That doesn't always work out the way you think it's going to. And with the results of this week, there is a huge possibility, actually, that the pendulum has swung back in favour of the Germans. And as a result of that, you know, you might not get 5 places next year. If that is the case, then Tottenham or Aston Villa are going to miss out. And Villa might have to win the Conference League to secure Europa League place, so they should be able to get that anyway. But they'll have a fight on their hands here, Darren, so they need points too.
Yeah, they do. I mean, they've won only three of their last 9 games, I think it is, and one of their last 5 Premier League games. The pressure of fighting for a Champions League place is starting to tell on them. Set against that, you know the stats around Arsenal. They've won 10 of their last 11 games. They're undefeated in 5 games away from home. They haven't conceded, and they've scored 38 goals in that sequence and conceded 4. Which is just frightening. And Ollie Watkins is a superb striker, as we all know. And he's also shown a bit of leadership last week when he got stuck into his team for saying, listen, we need more in this moment from you guys. And I include myself in that, he was saying. But I just think a little bit like West Ham, right now, Aston Villa have a defensive mistake in them. To be fair to them, they're without all so many players at the back who have had ACLs or other related injuries. And so they've had a lot of problems around that. But I just think at the time that they needed it most, their form has deserted them.
Liverpool against Crystal Palace kicks off at 2 o'clock on Sunday afternoon. These games will be followed keenly on the Sunday session on TalkSport. Looking forward to that. Dean Ashton will be keeping an eye on it in between. He's sort of glancing towards the Masters, I'm sure. He does like his golf. Whilst all that is going on, we'll be watching Liverpool against Crystal Palace. Liverpool, we've already spoken about. Crystal Palace caused problems last week for Manchester City. I was at that game, and what they did is they exposed the weaknesses in the Manchester City defence. They knew that if you get the ball in behind Manchester City, you can cause them issues. And they did that in the third minute with Jean-Philippe Mateta. They will be looking at those weaknesses in the Liverpool defence, especially down the sides where the fullbacks like to bomb on. There is gaps there. They will be trying to get players out wide, won't they, to cause Liverpool issues, especially early in the game, Dean.
Yes, they will, and they'll get so much encouragement from that Atalanta performance. It's so interesting to see Glasner go in there, change the formation. And how fascinating is it to see, you know, a player emerge almost from a new manager? Mateta's looked totally different to me since Glasner's gone in there. He's made such a difference at the top end of the pitch, which they have lacked for a long time in terms of that quality and that threat. Consistently, and probably my favourite Premier League duo are back together now with Elise back fit and Eze. Those two are two of the most exciting players. If you get a chance, go and watch those two. They are terrific to watch, and they will cause any team problems. I don't know whether Elise is fit to start, but he will play a part, I'm sure. And if they get it defensively right, that, you know, those three and particularly Elise and Eze will cause Liverpool problems.
It's interesting, actually, because Elise came off the bench last week and immediately made an impact, almost like clicking your fingers and things completely change. He was terrific in the last 20 minutes of that game against Manchester City. Interestingly, Eze actually hasn't been performing particularly well over the last couple of weeks. And there's been a sort of, he actually dragged off in that game against Manchester City for not really getting involved. Let's turn our attention, though. I mean, we spoke a little bit. I must mention Adam Wharton, who I think has been brilliant for Crystal Palace and was very good last week as well. Darren, obviously, all this is happening at Liverpool with the backdrop of the manager changing in the summer. And this week, Ruben Amorim, who is the sporting manager, has been linked all week and he sort of was asked about it. He's been asked about it constantly. On Saturday night, he sort of indicated that his time would be coming to an end at Sporting, right? Earlier in the week, then he decided to sort of try and pour cold water on these rumours that it was all a done deal. There's been no interview with any club, he said, no agreement with any club. This is the last time I'm going to talk about my future. The only thing I want to do is be champions with Sporting. Nothing will change. I think that he's sort of trying to dampen down the speculation in the same way that Jurgen Klopp doesn't want to talk about it that much because he doesn't want that anxiety. The closer you get to the end, to start spreading into his team, like, you know, maybe it has done with Liverpool. But how close do you think he is to securing that position? Because if you look at the bookmakers, he is the 4-1 on favourite, and the next person in the bookies list is 14-1.
Yeah, I think, and I have learned this over time through working in football journalism, very often, when we're speculating over who a manager of a club might be, the decision to take that manager, to acquire that manager, has already been made. And all the parties are just very good about semantics and language around sidestepping what has and hasn't been agreed. And anyone who follows football will have seen that many times. I remember one particular example of a manager who I knew, and basically we'd been speaking, and he told me that he'd been offered a job at a particular club, and the other manager was still in place. I remember this season at Wolves, Julian Lopetegui was still in place when his job had been offered to Gary O'Neill. I'm not betraying any sources or anything like that, because, you know, I know it to be true. There was a very long interview with Gary. Gary, at the time, if I'm not mistaken, had been on holiday. And very often, clubs do their due diligence and make their decisions while everybody else is running around speculating, pontificating. And certainly clubs with the foresight and the attention to detail as Liverpool. So I think that although he hasn't been formally offered the job, we know how football works. There will have been somebody who will have spoken to him, set out what the requirements are at Liverpool, agreed a package with him. And at some level, there will be a confidence around whether or not he is prepared to join or not. Just nothing formal at this stage. So do I think he's going to go there? Yes. There have been lots of other people in the frame. I did hear a shout from another outlet for Ange Postecoglou, which did kind of, I found very interesting, because he does have the temperament and a commitment to front foot football that would really suit Liverpool. But I think Liverpool probably wouldn't want the drama of trying to prize him away from a club where the custodians are renowned for digging their heels in and driving hard bargains, etc., etc.
Yes. Danny Murphy, actually, I did a show with Danny Murphy the other week on Talk Sport, in which he said he thought that Ange Postecoglou would be the perfect fit for Liverpool, and he was banging on about him being a Liverpool fan. But I think that would go down so badly with Tottenham Hotspur supporters, and so badly with Daniel Levy, that it would be a difficult deal to do. And that's the other thing, right? You want to get it done quickly, because although we all think there's been quite a lot of lead time into this, actually getting someone in place, getting them behind their desk and being able to prepare for the summer and the acquisitions and changes in personnel that you will need in order to continue the upward trajectory that Liverpool found themselves on this season is important. There needs to be expediency. Manchester City take on Luton. They go first in the title race this week. And this should be a game, Dean, that they can rest players in ahead of that Champions League midweek match. Because if you look at the way that Arsenal perform when they switched out five for their game against Luton recently, there's every opportunity that this should be, right? This should be a game in which Manchester City can manage their squad.
Yes, I think Arsenal showed that against Luton. This isn't a full-strength Luton defence. This is a defence that that have conceded many, many goals, and it shouldn't be an issue to score goals for whichever personnel Pep Guardiola chooses. I know Foden looked like he was limping slightly with maybe a dead leg, so you would expect him to be rested. I think Haaland will play, because I think he wants to get him back into a good rhythm, and this is a great chance after the goals he scored in the cup competition against Luton. That doesn't mean you just take them lightly, because I think Luton will carry a threat on the break, set plays, and City can sometimes switch off against these sides. But I would fully expect it to be a comfortable win and some rotation to go with that. And then I think that'll give us a really good idea of the team he's then going to select for Real Madrid.
How big a chance have Luton given themselves of staying up after that victory against Bournemouth last week, Darren? Because they've got Brentford at home, Wolves away, Everton at home, West Ham away, Fulham at home, three big home games there. Have they given themselves a chance of staying up? 25 points is the same as what Nottingham Forest have got at this stage because of the deductions, etc., etc.?
In a word, yes. I think Kenilworth Road is one of the toughest places to go in the Premier League. Some of the top teams have needed late goals to grab points there. I think they're better than the other teams in that bottom five. I know Everton are starting to hit form, but between the two clubs, I give Luton the edge. I fancy their will, their organisation, their desire and their ability to grab crucial goals late on in matches.
It's amazing, isn't it? You look at the difference in terms of points that Everton would have if they weren't deducted. I think it's a total of 8 now that they've been deducted. But the goals, they just don't score any goals. 16 away from home, 16 at home. Luton at home have scored 24 and away from home 21. That's a marked difference, isn't it? When you think that they've got what was at one stage considered to be an England international striker up front, Everton. Let's turn our attention to the bottom of the table now, because Everton deducted 2 more points this week, and Sheffield United, well, they've got 2 more points deducted, but not now, the next time they're in the EFL. I wonder when that could be.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. There's a lot more to those 90 minutes than what goes down on the pitch. With the latest odds, form guides and expert opinions, you'll know the score with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org. T's and C's apply.
Well, it's probably likely, Dino, that they'll be in the EFL very shortly. 16 points from 31 games will do that to you. But it's a bit strange that they sort of announced this. The EFL sort of announced this. We're coming for you. You're going to get 2 points deducted whenever you come back. Does that give Sheffield United motivation to go on a thrilling 7-game winning run and save themselves? In fact, even if they did win, sell 7 of their remaining games, Sheffield United. I sound like I'm being a bit out of order here. I don't mean to be. Even if they did win all of their 7 games, that would give them an extra 21 points. That's only 37 points. And in some seasons, that's still been enough to relegate you.
Yeah. I think they've at least seemed to be putting more of a fight up in recent games.
Last couple of weeks.
I think McBurnie and Brereton Diaz have given them a bit of life at the top end of the pitch and are causing some problems. But I'd love to get both of your opinions on this, because ultimately you just spoke about Luton, who are still in the bottom three, still can't get out of the bottom three, even though teams above them have been docked points. But are these Premier League sides... Are those points deductions, are they enough? Or do they think it's worth the risk knowing that we're only going to get 2 points or 4 points? And for these clubs, is it worth that risk knowing that it might only be those points? And you can get around that. There's enough within your squad to cope with that.
I don't know what Darren thinks, but I don't think it's calculated enough. I don't think that they calculated that in. I don't think that Mashiri was sitting there thinking to himself, well, it doesn't matter, we might get a points deduction. I actually think they thought they wouldn't get any points deduction, and they haven't got the ability to control their own spending in a way that would be prudent like some of the other clubs. So I just don't think they're well run enough to be able to do that. But you do raise an interesting question. Because if you think that Everton and Nottingham Forest have been deducted points quite heftily, yet still the three promoted clubs haven't managed to claw their way out of the bottom three, What does that say about the disparity between those who are established in the Premier League and those that are coming up, Darren? Or is this just a one-off because this season we've got teams that don't have necessarily the structure of others, like maybe Leeds or Leicester or Southampton?
Well, two things. In answer to your question, I don't think it's worth the risk because I think it will be a race of fine margins. And I think either Nottingham Forest or Everton will go and Luton will stay up at their expense. So I don't think would be worth the risk. And actually, should I be raw and say, yeah, I will. There are a lot of clubs who want to throw money at situations and they're now crying foul and you're unfair to us or whatever. Forest have spent a small fortune. I remember when I used to do the pod and every other week in the transfer window, Forest bought another player and another player. I mean, goodness me, there are clubs who are actually playing by the rules, relatively speaking, and looking at other clubs who are throwing money at it and saying, how is that allowed to happen within the rules? So I think it's right that points are deducted. In answer to the second question, I think that it's not a lack of quality that did for Burnley. It's the insistence on playing a naive style of football, a passing game that was able to succeed in the Championship. In the Premier League, stubbornly, I might add, there have been one or two games where he's changed it up and realised that you've got to do that. But a lot of the goals that Burnley have conceded have been through trying to play out from the back and getting caught cold. With Sheffield United, it is a lack of quality, because the Premier League has improved since they were last in the top division and they were able to stay up with a lot of the same players.
And they've been poorly run. You know, they've got an owner who wants to sell and hasn't been able to do so, and who cut his losses in the last summer window because he decided to sell their two best players for a decent amount of money and didn't replace them. You know, that, you know, it's as simple as that, isn't it? You know, you've got an owner who wants to get out and no one wants to buy that club for the price that he wants for it.
Yeah, that's true. But I mean, there are lots of examples of owners that have wanted to get out of clubs and have wanted to sell. But the clubs in the meantime have done well because they've been managed by people who have seen an opportunity to make a name for themselves and have improved the playing contingent and created a culture where those players have been able to retain a consistency that helps them to move up the table. But I just think that the quality overall at Sheffield United this time around isn't there. They can't defend. I think you've got to go back to Ipswich in the 60s for the last time a team conceded as many goals in English football's top division. And they don't score enough goals either.
It's really bad. You're absolutely right. I think it's 63, 64, is it? The last time that someone was this bad defensively at this stage of a top flight season. Dean, Premier League clubs have voted midweek to relax PSR rules. The same ones remain in place for next season. What's the future? I mean, the future seems to be we'll follow UEFA's model going forward, in which case they can sort of spend 85% of their turnover on wages and transfer fees, and that will be the case up to 115%. But it's sort of gone from let's try and curtail the spending to how much can we spend, please? Can you tell us? Because we'd really like to know. Do you think that the rejig of the rules is going to help or hinder the Premier League going forward?
I think there is part of me that you know would say, for example, look at a Newcastle and say that the timing almost feels unfortunate for them in terms of coming in and maybe having the ability to spend huge amounts of money, but not being able to because of the restraints of these rules, and almost as if these rules have been put in place and so many teams have got the club in reverse, trying to backtrack, trying to claw back almost the spending that's already been done to get in line with the, and they've not been able to do it. And therefore they have been docked points, and they don't bring in the revenue of a Manchester City or a Manchester United. And all of a sudden now it's actually we've gone too far, and this is now too difficult to keep in line, and actually we're maybe, you know, sort of strangling the ability to bring the best players to the Premier League. The big issue they'll always have is if you are spending the amounts of money on transfer fees and wages, how are you ever going to be able to cut your cloth properly? you know, I think wages-wise, personally, I think that is, and transfer fees and agents' fees, those are the things that ultimately the club wants to spend on, because you want to bring in the best players, the best managers, to give yourself the best chance. And until there is some kind of limitation on that, I think we'll always be in this position.
It's interesting, though, isn't it? Because there's not many other leagues in the world that pay the sort of money that the Premier League pays. So it's almost a sort of false economy, in that the Premier League is competing against itself in terms of who can pay the most money for stuff, because you don't get no team in Spain who's in the top six, apart from Real Madrid at this moment in time, and even they are not spending as much money as they used to, are going to go out and buy a player for £50 million. They might buy one every now and again for £100 million, but they're not spending £50 million on an average midfield player, are they? That's just not happening. You know, Werder Bremen don't spend 12 million quid or 15 million quid on a playmaker. It just doesn't happen. The fact is that the transfer market is Real Madrid, Barcelona occasionally, even they've got no money now, buying massive Galacticos for a huge money. And then the Premier League, between themselves, spending huge money acquiring talent from Europe and elsewhere for a lot of cash. Now, between Italian clubs, there's no market. Between Spanish clubs, you know, Mallorca don't buy a player off Valencia for 20 million quid. It just doesn't happen. It's only here where that sort of economy is in place. And I wonder how long that can go on for. You talked about the wages being too high. Transfer fees are the one for me that have to come massively down. And the amount of money that the Premier League clubs get in, it seems odd that they spend so much. They allow so much of their cash to go out of the business. It's a very weird approach to running the business, which is why Brighton, I think, have set a model of how to do it properly. One thing I wanted to ask you, Darren, about was Everton and their future. Because, look, Farhan Ashiri has been trying to sell this club to 777 Partners for a very long time. 777 Partners have got not the greatest track record in football, in sport, in even other businesses as well. You know, there's a lot of people that are sort of raising eyebrows about their ability to complete that deal. What is the future for Everton if that does not go through? Because by now, you would have expected that to have been sorted. There was a further delay this week.
It's a really good question. And it's part of the reason why I think they should forget about appeals and now just get on with playing football. I heard one of the leading high-profile former councillors talking about it in midweek on White and Jordan. And I just think that given the uncertainty around a possible sale, that the using up energy to fight against 2 points, and I can see why they're doing it, because obviously if they go down into the Championship, it becomes even harder to sell the club. And also, they've got a new stadium in Bramley Dock. They need the Premier League finance to be able to have any chance of being able to keep their heads above water, in a manner of speaking. It is just such a mess around the whole ownership structure and future because of those questions around 777, because there isn't anybody else waiting in the wings to come along and I would actually use the term bail them out, give them any kind of certainty and stability in relation to their future. I just can't see it. They are victims of a vanity project under Farhad Mashiri that average players and agents, avaricious in some respects, agents have taken advantage of. They've had their pants pulled down and now they're reaping the whirlwind.
Yeah. Forest host Wolves this weekend live on TalkSport 2. Nuno Espirito Santo, formerly Wolves manager, now Forest boss. Good opportunity for them, he may feel. Let's hear from him, though, because he's been talking about the situation at the bottom regarding the points deductions, the financial issues, etc., etc. An absolute mess.
I never experienced this situation. I think none of us has experienced this before. It's a mess, isn't it? So so much things going on that we cannot clearly know what's going to happen. So let's leave it this way and wait. And honestly, me and the players are only focused on our tasks.
I just wonder, when we look back at this season, Dean, whether or not the Premier League will have lost a little bit of credibility in global eyes because of the confusion about how many points people have actually really got. Because even at this moment in time, Everton may appeal their two-point deduction they got last week. Therefore, if that's the case, they'd have four more points more than Luton. We've only got six games to go. Those teams have only got six games to go. If they don't know what they really need, that sort of calls into question the sporting integrity of the competition, doesn't it?
Massively, massively. I think it's a horrendous look for the Premier League, which is why it seems like these the points that are being deducted seem to be fast-tracked through, whereas they were taking a lot longer, it seemed, to start with, because I think they realised that they surely can't get to a situation where any of this is not resolved come the last game of the season, surely, or that an appeal can happen after the season's finished. And it's almost as
which
if...
you can do in the rule book.
Yes, but I think even the authorities are, I'm sure, realising that this just isn't working, and they've got to get to grips with it very, very quickly, especially if the rules are going to be in place for next season. I'm sure there's other clubs that behind the scenes are worried about what might happen come the start of next season.
It's interesting that the change to the rules actually means that they are going to be assessed next year on their results straight after the end of a transfer window, so that you can sort of get a better, more almost live view of a club's finances. But again, it just does sort of seem to see they're sort of making it up as they go along, and it's not clear to everybody. It's not clear to everybody as to what the possible punishments are. I mean, we've spoke about it on this podcast many a time. The reason behind that is because the clubs asked for to not know in a previous Premier League AGM, but it doesn't really help the punter, and it doesn't help the image of the Premier League, I don't think. Helping the image of our podcast this week was the reintroduction of Darren Lewis, who has given us heavyweight opinions. He's dressed to kill. You can't see him because this is only an audio podcast, but I can tell you he looks delicious. Absolutely. He looks like he sounds velvet. And it's been great to have you.
It's been great to be here. Thank you very much indeed.
We've missed you. I'm lucky enough to see you every now and again at football matches up and down the country. But our listeners, I know that they feel as if this week we've given them the treat of pouring liquid gold into their ears. Dean, it's been nice to see you too. You practice your swinging over the weekend at the golf swinging, just in case Mrs. Ashton is listening.
Yeah.
Newcastle Tottenham is live on TalkSport. It's an exclusive 12:30 on Saturday. Leeds Blackburn at the same time from the Championship is on TalkSport 2. We're around the grounds at 2:30. Nottingham Forest Wolves is on TalkSport 2 at 3 o'clock. On Sunday, we have the Women's FA Cup semi-finals, both of them, 12 o'clock and 2:35. And I'll be on the Sunday session from 1:30, trying to keep abreast of absolutely everything in the sporting universe. We've got three big Premier League games, those two Women's FA Cup semi-finals, action from the Masters as well. It's going to be hell for leather stuff. Join us for that. And then on Sunday night, I'll be back with the visual podcast, which will be available for you to review all the weekend's action. Oh, we've got Chelsea Everton on Monday night as well, which will bring you on TalkSport. Gentlemen, thank you very much. Enjoyed it very much.
Thank you.
Indeed. And we'll see you soon.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. The latest odds? We set them. Form guides? We've got them. Expert opinions? We share them. The best fans in the world deserve the best. Be match day ready before the whistle blows with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org. T's and C's apply.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.